Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Professor Peter Frankopan of Oxford University. His new book is The Earth Transformed, An Untold History. And we now go to a period that is striking in that Scandinavians now take a role, as does climate, because of the cooling of some temperatures before the medieval warm period, and then suddenly the warming that was created in the dates, especially between 950 and 1250. And again, Peter, I circled in my notes low volcanism, correct? That is the explanation for why this period is so stable.
That's a prime reason, but the natural cycles are also important in that, but also the ability to be successful. So those changes provide motivations and incentives and rewards to look out for new pastures, either because, for example, changes of wind direction or intensity, or because of resource shortage. There are pressures and pulls and pushes to look at new worlds. And in fact, those expansions of the Vikings out into the North Atlantic towards first Iceland, then Greenland, and then Newfoundland are mirrored at about the same time, the same process, by peoples in the southern oceans of the South Pacific, where there's a whole series of colonizations of new areas and new islands that have never seen humans before. And again, we can date some of this because of new scientific data and technologies. But in the case of the North Atlantic, some of the drive was towards, because was to do with movements of shoals of fish further northwards into cooler waters as a result of the warming patterns, and some to do with the fact that these new lands that were discovered offered new abilities, new goods to trade. For example, walrus in large quantities that was very important, the walrus hide for making high quality ropes, or walrus tusks that were rival to elephant for ivory that was used in both religious and secular art. And so suddenly hitting a gold mine, so to speak, prompted higher levels of colonization. The challenge, of course, that the Vikings then ran into, or the Norse people ran into, is that most of the colonizers were men, because men want to take the rewards and think that they're brave. And so then you need to be able to find women and to be able to reproduce with. So that's solved in a couple of ways. One is by sort of tourist propaganda being spread around places like Norway, saying, come to Iceland, it's beautiful in the summer, there's plenty of land, you can be a queen in your own place here. But also through enslavement, coercion, and sexual violence and rape, by forcibly moving women, particularly from Ireland and northern Scotland, to settle in these islands too. And colonization of new territories is not a romantic, idyllic exploration of virgin territories. It's always combined with violence against other human beings in one form or another, but also with the acquisition of new natural resources. And typically what happens is that there's a rush towards them, like the Californian gold rush, and then too many people chase the same things, and then those supplies become cheaper, and then they get exhausted. And in the case of North America, the reason why Newfoundland fails as a colony is because it's too expensive to maintain and doesn't bring the rewards because prices have fallen.
We go to North America, however, a city I did not know existed, Cahokia, around 900 AD. You say this is a measure of the Big Bang of population. What was Cahokia? How did it thrive?
Well, Cahokia, we have no written records, so it's all based on the archaeological evidence, and it's to do with a measure looking at the size of mounds that are set up in the southern part of the United States that are obviously allowing larger populations to cooperate together. And when there is cooperation, the first thing you try to look for is what levels of elite housing is there, what kind of defenses are required, and are those monuments and buildings and defenses designed to express power and project how important the rulers are, or are they about defending yourself against other competitor sets? And Cahokia is probably the most important of all of the settlements in North America before the arrival of Columbus, because a state is able to hold together reasonably successfully for the best part of 200 or 300 years, until, again, exhaustion of resources, possibly to do with bacterial infections, possibly to do with social unrest, possibly to do with too many elites competing with each other and draining away resources, then means that what had been a cooperative cosmopolitan city starts to sag. And empires very rarely go out with an explosion or with a bang. They tend to just suffocate themselves and collapse under their own weight. And that seems to be what happens with Cahokia around about the late 1200s.
The subcontinent, the Chola people, they were a sizable empire in contest with others in the area. They were sustained and then they weakened. Did they weaken because of climate change or they were not able to adapt? Why did they fail?
Well, this time of low volcanism and climatic stability between around 950 and 1250 sees the rise of what Victor Lieberman calls parallel empires. So you see across from the Mediterranean going eastwards, a great Middle Eastern Islamic state based on the Abbasid Caliphate of Baghdad. You see a great empire in Pagan, what's now Burma. You see the Chola in southern India. You see the Khmer and the great city of Angkor. You see the Shijafaya, which is a great archipelago nation of what's now roughly Indonesia or so on. And these states are all rising together. And then, of course, the Tang and then the Song Dynasty in China. All of these are massive states, and they all rise together at the same time because they're fueling each other's rise. Again, I suppose how the United States and China fueled each other's rise in the last 30 years until maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and then things look slightly different. But those parallel roles of competition, trade, enhanced access allow for these great states to rise together. And because they're watching each other and having diplomatic exchanges, they see how each other's rituals work. They see how their palaces, how their temples look. So there's a lot of investment into the kinds of monuments that are so attractive to go and look at today, if you can, to visit places like Angkor.
30 seconds, Professor.
But the Chola are hugely successful in exporting Indian ideas and Indian culture, particularly eastwards into Southeast Asia, and the expansion of Hinduism alongside Sanskrit and Indian culture.
So the medieval warm period has parallel empires, and we're now about to proceed to the exploitation of nature and humankind in the Atlantic, especially. Professor Peter Frankopan, the book is The Earth Transformed and Untold History. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.